Welcome, everybody, to our Premier Insurance Partners podcast. Today on our podcast, I'm going to have Riley Burns, our college intern, interview me and ask me questions that a college intern would be interested in. You may find this interesting as well, because maybe some of these questions would be questions you would like to ask somebody like myself: how I got started in the business and what it's like to run Premier Insurance Partners after 16 years. So Riley, why don't you introduce yourself, tell them a little bit about your experience and why you're at Premier Insurance Partners, and we'll take it from there.
My name is Riley. Like Jerry said, I'm going to be a senior at Colorado State University this upcoming year. I'm studying financial planning, and that is why I was attracted to Premier Insurance Partners as a summer internship, because I know they do a lot of work with financial planners. So people are always interested to see how you get involved in this business. So my first question for you is, how did you get involved and why?
Well, I first got involved in the insurance business and was an insurance agent straight out of college. I'm probably one of the few people listening to this podcast, or actually in the entire country, that got into the insurance business as an agent fresh out of college. Most people fall into it after trying another career. So specifically, I started being an insurance agent straight out of college because my roommate in the fraternity house, his dad was a top insurance producer, and he invited me to follow him and become an insurance agent. So I thought it sounded exactly what I was looking for, a place that you were adequately paid for your efforts. And that's exactly what I found, that I was directly paid based on my efforts. If your question from that is, how did I get into the insurance marketing business and Premier Insurance Partners? Once I was an insurance agent for 7 years, I decided to see what else was available in the insurance arena. I didn't want to get out of the industry, but I knew there were other parts to the insurance industry besides being in direct sales. So I answered a little ad in a newspaper in Omaha, Nebraska, to be an entry-level insurance marketer with an independent marketing organization located right there in Nebraska. And from that, when I joined, I could see right away that it was a better track for me, because as being a marketer, I'm doing business-to-business sales as opposed to an agent, I was doing business-to-consumer sales. So I really enjoyed the business-to-business aspect and helping other agents grow their practices. So that was really the niche that I needed to find, and once I found it, I was off to the races. And then, to make a long story short, within that company, I became the chief marketing officer. We grew it to over 60 employees, and the owner sold the company for over $16 million to a big insurance company. With that, I was out of a job, so I honored my two-year no-compete, and then after 2 years, I founded Premier Insurance Partners, and that was in the summer of 2003.
So leading off that question, after starting your business, what adversity or roadblocks did you face along the way?
Well, starting a business, you face a lot of roadblocks, and I knew I was going to face a lot of roadblocks because I really studied business, and I studied what's the difference between successful business owners and those that fail or just don't grow very big. And what I learned immediately, and I knew was coming, was that many entrepreneurs are good at sales and doing the duties of their position. But then if you really want to grow a company and have lots of employees and build a true growing company, I guess, is you have to have other skills. You have to have computer skills. You have to have human resources skills. You have to have lawyering skills, because you have to install computer systems. You have to install employee benefits. You have to know how to hire and fire. You have to have someone to negotiate leases. And all that takes away from my unique ability, which I think my unique ability is hiring and motivating people to grow to their talent level. So knowing that though it would be difficult, I partnered on purpose almost immediately with another organization, and they handle all of our HR, they handle all of my computer needs, they handle all of my lawyering needs. So they do all the things that I knew were not my unique ability. In fact, those are things that would drive me crazy doing, and thus I wouldn't grow. And I do believe that's why a lot of entrepreneurs believe they're going to grow a big company, but they get stymied at one or two employees plus themselves because of all these other duties they have to do, which are not in their, what I always call, unique ability.
I know you're an extremely busy man with a family, work, your faith, hobbies, etc. How do you manage to balance all of these things while still taking time out for yourself and enjoying things such as hunting?
A great question, and again, Riley, what I've always done is I've studied successful people. I've always studied what does it take to be successful, and then I just try to emulate that. I think a lot of others try to, maybe they study success, but then they think they can do it their own way, and quite frankly, I always say if it worked for somebody else who's successful, then I'm not going to try and change it at all. So I have hired business coaches. But I think it all comes down to great time management, which everybody hears about. But it also comes down to what's the most important thing and being sure that you are focused on the most important thing. And many times, the most important thing is probably not the easiest thing to do, but it is the most important. And a person has to know what are their personal priorities. And interesting enough, when I was looking at business books to read, I Googled the most read books by successful executives, and the number one book time and time again was the Bible. And I said, well, if that's what they read, then I'm going to read the Bible, and that helped formulate my faith. And a lot of people say put your God first, your family second, and your business a real close third, and I try to follow that. So I always take time in the morning to do prayer time and reflection time. And that gets my day started off right. If I don't do that, my day is not going to go well. Secondly, I take time for my family. That's more important than the business. As they say, when you're on your deathbed, you don't ever say, I wish I would have spent more time at the office. People say, I wish I would have spent more time with my family. So I think you got to put family right up there as well. But at the same time, if you're like me, you want to make money. You want to grow a business. So you've got to really time manage the first two so that you can, when you get to work, you have time to get the things done that you have to get done. But with that, when you are at work, a person has to work. I cannot tell you how many times I walk through various offices or in places that I've worked, from grocery stores to office corporations, to where people just waste time at work. They're looking at Facebook, they're on YouTube, and they're reading the news from the day before. They're really not working. And so I've always said, as long as we're at work, let's work. And that's kind of the motto I go by, is first thing in the morning, I'm always going to do my prayer and reflection time. I'm going to find time to have breakfast with my family. I'm going to find time to have family dinner with my wife and kids. But also when I'm at work, I have a to-do list so that I'm focusing on the important things. I do not ever want to find myself on the internet reading the local newspaper on the internet or ESPN, because that's something I should do way down the list.
You've mentioned to me about doing the little things that others don't like, the hard things. Using the example of running stairs, all of the great athletes do it even when they don't want to. How do you get into that mindset to go forward on doing the hard things even when you don't want to?
Well, I don't think success is difficult as far as not knowing how to be successful. The difficult part is actually doing it. There isn't anybody out there who doesn't know how to lose weight. You just cut your calories, or you exercise more, or a combination of both. That's pretty simple. But actually doing is the tough part. A lot of people join a health club in January. They know what it takes to lose weight and get in shape. So they join the health club, but then after the first month, they get tired of going, and it just becomes difficult for them, and they refuse to go. Well, the successful person has the mindset that they're going to do it even when they don't want to. And I think that you can apply that to a lot of things: a successful marriage, a successful business, successful body physique, being successful at a marathon. Look at marathon running. Anybody, you can go to any marathon and see all types of body shapes actually completing the marathon. What's the key to it is that they had a plan and they stuck to it. And they knew it was going to be difficult. And even though it was difficult, they still got up every morning and ran the allotted number of miles for that day. Even though it was painful, even though they didn't want to do it, even though it might have been raining outside, they still do it. But it's a decision. It's a decision to be successful, and it's a decision to be in love. It's a decision to stay married. It's a decision to have a faith. It's all a decision. And so I just know that all those things, no matter what type of success it is, success isn't easy for anyone. but the successful people will do the things that failures simply refuse to do. But there's no secret to success. If I asked you how to lose weight, you could tell me how. If I asked you how to get big muscles, you could tell me how. If I asked you how to run a marathon, you could tell me, go get a training program, and you could do it. So I don't think success is a secret. I think actually doing the things is what stops everybody. And so even though I'm not the smartest, I don't have the best charisma, I'm not a Harvard graduate by any stretch of the imagination, I don't have a high, never had a high ACT score, but I just am resilient. And I look at athletes, and I know that athletes, it isn't always the most talented athlete who becomes the superstar. It's the athlete who kept practicing and running the stairs.
Your book, Extreme Producers, Their Insights and Secrets. What inspired you to write this book?
What I do at Premier Insurance Partners, and I have my whole career as an insurance marketing person, is I always share sales ideas. I never say I have great ideas because I don't. But I listen to top producers every day, and I ask them, how are you successful? And then they tell me how they are successful, whether that's at prospecting, whether that's at motivating themselves, whether that's at what lead systems that they use. But they all top producers have great ideas. So I ask them about their how they do what they do, and then from all those ideas, I share that on the next phone call I have. I say, hey, I just talked to a top producer like you yesterday or last hour or just my last phone call. Would you like to hear what they said? So I just share sales ideas, and that's really what people want. They don't want to know what I know. They want to know what top salespeople do. And so I share sales ideas all the time. So through that, many people have told me, well, you ought to write a book. You got all these great ideas. Why don't you write a book? So eventually I did. It took me a long time to figure out how to do it because I'm not very smart. But eventually Extreme Producers, Their Insights and Secrets came out, and it's got pretty good reviews on Amazon, so that's great, and Barnes & Noble, so that makes me happy. So hopefully, I guess it is resounding with a lot of people out there.
So the name Extreme Producers, what does it mean to you to be an extreme producer, and why is this the message you are trying to promote?
Well, extreme producers are the producers that are at the very high end of the production scale, people who are certainly earning well over $100,000 a year, because any Google search will tell you that only 7% of the adult U.S. population earns over $100,000 a year as an individual. Now, there's a lot of households that as a couple, they may make over $100,000, but as an individual, only 7% of the U.S. population earns over $100,000. And of course, that goes up tremendously higher. If you want to look at the top 1%, the top 1% earn about $400,000 a year. And so it's not easy to make a lot of money, even though most people seem to think that everybody's making $100,000 a year. Well, they're not. And so I wanted to highlight these extreme producers, these salespeople that were actually not only providing for their family, but being the upper echelon of all earners in the United States, no matter what the occupation. And so I call them extreme producers because, in fact, they are extreme. If you're in the top 7%, I would say that's pretty extreme.
All right, next I want to talk about a specific tip that you gave. Tip number 16, manage your day the night before. So this is something I've started doing personally and have seen dramatic improvements in my productivity. Could you elaborate some on this? Why does it work, and why is it something you believe everyone should do?
Well, this is an insight I got from a top producer, and I've heard it many times from people, sales coaches and others that are studying success, and that is to put together your to-do list for the next day, but you do it the night before. If you put together your to-do list when you leave the office, right before you leave the office, then you are looking forward to the next day. When you wake up, you know exactly what needs to be done, and you're looking forward to the next day so that you can jump out of bed. Also, since you wrote it down the evening before, your mind automatically is going to be working on it during the course of the evening and night, helping you to solve the problems of whatever are on your to-do list or how to do those items the most efficiently and effectively. So having a to-do list the night before is so important because it gives you a reason to get out of bed. I've talked to people that say, well, I do my to-do list when I walk in the morning. Well, and they're fresh. Well, I don't agree with that, because if you don't have your to-do list done, why are you jumping out of bed? Are you jumping out of bed to make a to-do list? I don't know of anybody who jumps out of bed to make a to-do list. But people do jump out of bed because they know they have a lot to accomplish that day, and it gives them a reason to get out of bed. But also the fact that your mind works on it during the night while you sleep, I firmly believe in that, and it helps you to come up with better solutions and to implement your to-do list more effectively and efficiently.
Going off your book once again, on tips 25 and 26, you talk a lot about goals. When you're writing down business goals, do you prefer short-term or long-term goals, and how do you follow up on these?
I do goals, and again, I have hired sales coaches, and I think hiring a sales coach is vital, much like hiring an exercise coach or hiring a diet coach or anything like that. I think coaches are worth their money, even though they can be expensive, but they help you think through things, and they have systems set up that all you have to do is fill in the blank. So when I do my goals anymore, I certainly have a system that I've learned from a sales coach, and they've done all the hard work of setting up the system. I just have to kind of fill in the blanks. So for your question of how do I set up my goals long-term versus short-term, I always start with the longer term, and it really kind of depends on what the goal is. If it's something to do with, all depends on what the goal is. It could be a 5-year goal I want to achieve it. It could be a 10-year goal. It could be a 20-year goal. And then I'm going to start backing that down to a much, much shorter time frame. So even though it might be, say, a 5-year goal, I'm going to back it down to a 1-year goal. And then I'm going to break it into quarters. And then I'm going to review that on a monthly basis. So I now have a 1-year goal broken into quarters. I'm going to review it on a monthly basis. And then at the end of each month, I can see I'll write down what progress I've made to it. And it might be a goal that I have accomplished in 1 month, and I can cross that off and replace it with another one. It might be a goal that after 4 quarters, I realize that I'm not going to make this by the end of the year, so I need to adjust it. Or it might be a goal that after a few months, I may say it's just not achievable, and nor do I even want it anymore. My situation has changed, and then I'll cross it off. But the short answer to your question is I start with the long-term goal, and then I bring it down to a 1-year goal. Then I, within that flow chart I have, it will become a quarterly and monthly goal. So I want to be working on a monthly goal, but that monthly goal probably projects itself into a much longer goal of some kind.
What drives or motivates you to continue to expand and grow your business?
That's an easy one for me to answer, and I think it has to be easy in order for it to grow. A person needs to know their why. So your really question is, what's the why behind helping me grow the business? And really, the why is that I know few people can do it. I know I'm not that smart. I graduated from a small high school. I didn't get super great grades in college, and didn't get super great grades on my ACT. But I just know few people can be successful. And I know that it doesn't take intelligence, and it doesn't take charisma or good looks. What it takes is perseverance. If you persevere, you can reach your goal. So I get a kick out of doing things that few people can do. Few people can start a successful business. Few people can make over $100,000 a year. Few people can have a successful marriage for 25 years. Few people can do most successful things because most people are average. And what I also learned is that if you're below average, you'll get pulled up to average because that's where the masses are. The masses will pull you up to average. But once you start exceeding average and getting better than average in any category, the masses are all on average and they'll start pulling you down. So you have to be able to work against that pull to succeed, because the higher up the ladder you go, the farther away from you get from the averages, and people say, oh, that's okay, you don't have to do that. Come over here and watch TV with us. Or, you know, you don't need to do that. Let's go have a beer, or let's do that. Well, that's what the masses are doing. That's what the average people are doing. So you need to have the mindset that, do you want to be average or do you want to be above average? And if you want to be above average, then you've got to be prepared that the masses are going to try to pull you back to being average. So in answer to your question, what drives me now is seeing even more people have extreme success. I wrote a book on extreme producers. I see the types of lives that they live and the positivity that they have. And I want everybody at Premier Insurance Partners and all the agents that we encounter, I want them to have that successful, happy life. I don't want them to be average. I want them to be above average. And that's what drives me, is to see other people break through being average and being above average. Because once they're above average in positive categories, they'll be above average in other positive categories.
In a business like this, surrounding yourself with a great staff is crucial, and you've certainly done that with the personnel here. What to you makes a great marketer or salesman? What traits do they possess?
Well, if anybody knew what makes a great salesperson, they would solve the world problems. Because if you look at any organization, they're all looking for great salespeople. I don't care if it's a car dealership. I don't care if it's Google. I don't care if it's Premier Insurance Partners. I don't care if it's an insurance agency or a real estate agency. They're all trying to figure out what makes a good salesperson or how to make someone a good salesperson, and nobody has broke that, or they would be just killing it. And so everybody's looking for great salespeople. And so I think the difference is really within that person. Of course, you have to have great training and you have to have the right environment. I always said that as an insurance agent selling directly to the consumer, I did okay. I was a good agent. I was it for 7 years and survived and did fairly well for 7 years. But once I got on the business-to-business side, I think I became, I hate to say great, but I think I'm really good on the business-to-business side. So sometimes you can have a good salesperson, but they're just in the wrong environment and or in the wrong on the wrong track, so to speak. And so if they change that up a little bit, they may find they do better.
No business goes without facing its internal and external challenges. What are some that you and your business face, and what do you do to overcome them?
That's a difficult question to answer because there's so many different paths that I could take to give you an answer on that. But let's just look at a few of them. So some challenges are just people's lives. You know, within a company, there's real people here with real lives, with problems in their families, with deaths, illnesses, raising children. So really maintaining the flow and letting people take care of their outside problems. I think that's big. If somebody has a family situation, I'd rather they go take care of it right away and then come back to work and go fix it. Or maybe they are having car troubles. Well, let's go get those outside things fixed and get them done right away. And then we can come back and concentrate at work. Other outside influences might be regulatory items, things we have no influence over because the regulatory agencies change items, or maybe interest rates change as it comes to the insurance world, or maybe insurance companies that we represent, they discontinue a product. All those things are challenges, and the way I look at those is that those are the things that will make our competitors quit. So I like challenges because if we can make our way through those challenges and those obstacles, when we come out the other side, not only are we stronger, but we likely have fewer competitors because it has caused them to quit. We've had a few regulatory things come through in the last couple years that literally some of our competitors have just gotten out of the business. Also because of it, it has prevented new competitors from coming in. So it's expensive for us to work through those problems, and it's time consuming and it weighs on my mind. But at the same time, I know that if it was easy, anybody would be doing it, and it probably wouldn't pay very well, and I'd have a lot of competitors. So the more difficult it is, or the more problems that arise, keeps out competition, eliminates competition, and just makes it overall better for the ones who are able to work through it.
So as a conclusion, looking back over the last 16 years of your business, where do you see yourself and your business after these next upcoming 16 years?
Well, we want to continue to grow in Premier Insurance Partners. I think we have a lot of growth ahead of us. I think we've made it through the difficult years, and now we have the finances and we have the number of great marketers on board that have grown with Premier Insurance Partners. So we have a lot of experience behind us. And so now I think we can really, truly have some exponential growth. It's kind of like what they say that as an individual, your strongest earning years are when you're age 40 and beyond, because you've got to build up experience and you've got to build up knowledge and you've got to build up critical mass. And that's kind of the same way for us. We'll grow exponentially more in the next 16 years than we did from the start, because from the start you're starting at zero and it's just hard to get the momentum, much like a snowball. A snowball is very small when you first make it, but as it gets bigger, each turn adds so much to the snowball because it's a much bigger turn of a huge ball. And so I really feel that we're just going to continue to grow. We're one of the leaders in our industry, thankfully. And I just see that we're going to be able to continue to do some big things that we weren't able to do when we were small and as a startup. There's just a lot more opportunities when you have the critical mass, when you have the financials, and when you have experienced people on staff.
All right, that concludes this podcast. Thanks first, Jerry, for having me on, answering all my questions, and then thanks to everyone out there listening.